I think this record's kind of opened people's eyes a little bit and gone, and people go, oh, I didn't like them before, but this record's cool. They look like, well, asking us what we were playing in the bar the other day. And like, oh, no, you're not playing this one. You've got to play this one. So I swear you were starting to change our set list to the songs they wanted. We asked our lighting guy, Hayden, to flood the place with smoke haze. And there was a fire alarm upstairs. So the venue almost got evacuated. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, they were not.
He came after the set. He came up because he was like, guys, I got told of 3 times, but I kept going.
But this time around, it's kind of good they die because they're evil.
Happiness and death.
Yeah.
So here we go. Hello, Will from Creeper, and hello, our audience to the Outcast podcast. Nice to meet you, Will. How's it going?
Nice to meet you, Kai. Yeah, everything's great. Actually, it's day one, so we're off to a good start. It's nice to be in Berlin again.
Yeah, we're here in Berlin at Hole 44. How often have you been here?
We've been here a few times. I've been a lot over the years with different bands and things. When I first came in my old band, our time down here, like it was like a kind of a punk. We started off like a fast core kind of hardcore band, and we kind of developed more into what Creeper does now, really. But so I've been here lots over the years. Berlin's always one of my favorite places to go. Lots of good vegan food here, you know. Yeah, like they're very good. They cater very well to the stuff I eat. So I love it, and also I always try and make a pilgrimage to see the Hands Are Hole in the Wall, where Brian Eno and David Bowie made those records. Mm-hmm. I love David Bowie, and lots of history for me there as well. I love it here.
That's great. Yeah, how was the show today? We are talking right now after the show, and I think Atreyu is also finished right now. How did you feel?
Well, it was great. You know, it's one of those things. It's like it's day one. So like we had some issues with like monitors and stuff in areas. But like show was great and the kids are amazing. It's lovely meeting lots of lovely people. And people are so supportive here. And I think we don't come over here quite enough. I wish we came over here more. And it's really not very far from where we live. I wish we kind of made the pilgrimage more.
Yeah, you said you live in Manchester, so it's not that far.
It's not far.
So a direct flight from Manchester to...
Well, we're on a bus to Betray, so we're sharing, so it was just a drive, you know, to work up here. But if I came here for like a holiday or something, it's not far at all. It's like a really, really easy flight. But I always love coming out here. Like, it's always really good fun. We always have such a laugh. And I think, German people as well, I feel like we have like a lot in common, and like everyone wants to drink, everyone wants to have fun. And every time we go out here, we always meet amazing people, like moshers who are into music and stuff as well. It's a city of culture here. You know, there's a lot of people who are into stuff. And that's my favorite people in the world, people who have obsessive compulsions into music or into the arts and stuff. And there's a lot of that here.
Especially when you're in a scene, and it doesn't matter where you are around on the world. If you have the same taste in music or movies or whatever. So
oh, definitely.
You get together.
100%. It's like when you see someone in like a band shirt in the street, you know, like it's just that kind of tribalism of it. And it's cool. It's a lot of that here. So yeah, it's always so much fun every time we come here.
Yeah. But yeah, as you said, I also thought at the beginning of the show, let's go back to the show, that it started, I think the sound wasn't pretty awesome, but when it started with the third song, I think it was Sacred Blasphemy, you really got into it and you felt the vibe, and I felt the vibe, and that was really great.
It takes a minute. I think like today's been a bit manic, where it's been like we had to set up really quick, and then it's a drop and go today, so like all of our gear's here, but like our bus isn't here, so like it's like we've left stuff, it's the classic first show thing, but once it gets going, it's great. And also, you know, the crowd were great as well today. Yeah. And this venue's lovely. It's really nice.
Yeah, that's good, yeah. How do you think about the participation down below?
Incredible. And it's funny, like with that one, we've been doing that one for years now. And you never know how it's going to go. You never know if like, people are going to take the fuck off, you know? But like it was great. Like there was really, really, really responsive people. And I think part of our job as the opener as well is to get everyone ready for Atreyu, you know? Yeah, and exactly. So like part of our shtick is to try and warm everyone up, and everyone was up for it tonight, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, it sounded amazing, so yeah. My only question is, where was Darcia tonight?
Darcia, we can't take Darcia out here, unfortunately, we've got to leave her at home, because, well, we're sharing a bus, we're on a real stripped back production here, and I've been desperate for years to bring out, like, some of these big theatrical things we do at home here, but we've just not quite the right size here yet to justify bringing a whole thing over. But we're hoping that stuff like this, like, it's really promising for us, where it's like, oh, people get it and people understand the music, and so we're hoping to get there. She couldn't come today. We just took her away on this tour in the UK, and it was really, really funny. She was
so because
funny.
I saw all the pictures on social media. Yeah. Where you have all that dramatic stuff on
stage. Yeah. There's a lot of. It was a really extreme show, that one just now, and lots of logistical things like getting on and off, and
It's also different if you have a headliner show or if you have a support slot. Yeah,
exactly. So all we can do here really is come out and kind of showcase stuff. And we're on album three now, so it's trying to show like a certain amount of catalog. Like Treyu, like, took us out, and they've been like big fans for ages, which has been great. And they look like, were asking us what we were playing in the bar the other day. And like, oh no, you're not playing this one. You got to play this. So Australia was starting to change our set list to the songs they wanted.
what song did they suggest that you didn't want to play?
Well, no, we want to play them all, but we only got so long, and they kept going, we're going to extend your set so you can play. They keep saying, well, oh well, whatever, we'll play for however. But Dan plays saxophone. He's just from the Treyu, and he's just been learning the saxophone. He was just telling me, he's like, there's a song called Paradise on our second record, and it's got a sax part on it, and we did it once live in London with a sax guy, but it didn't work out so good. The sax player wasn't very good. It was a guy just came in, but Dan was like, learn it. He was like, I've learned it already. I think it's gonna take a couple of shows, but we're gonna try and get him to come out and play it with us. So yeah, they want that one. They wanted Be My End, another song from that record. They know Sex Death Inside Out. But yeah, like they've been very supportive of the band for quite a while now. Like, I met Brandon for the first time on his like video podcast he did, and I just loved him. I've always loved Treyu. I went to see Treyu when I was a kid. I've seen them for years, and so
they said it's 25 years next year,
which is crazy, right?
It's pretty long.
Yeah. Makes you feel old. You know, you're like, fuck, I've been going to see this band since I was a kid. You know, they're so lovely, man. They're so cool.
Great. I just have some. We already started, but I have some starting questions to get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah.
Some this or that question: Danzig or Sisters of Mercy?
And that's really hard for me because they're two of my favorite. I saw Sisters of Mercy last week, actually. They were in Manchester. The thing with Sisters of Mercy is they're either brilliant alive or they're awful. Like, you don't get anything in between. And they were really on form the last time I saw them.
Okay.
But like, in terms of the catalog and stuff, like, Glenn Danzig's my hero, like it always has been. And like,
you're totally relayed.
Oh man, yeah, I can tell your dance, you know, like, I think Danzig would take the cake for me. Like, he's just one of a kind person. And I was a punk kid originally, grew up in the punk scene in the UK. And so, like, the Misfits were like a staple. Like, and I've always been obsessed with the Misfits and those Danzig records we were talking about before we went live on this. So like, I would say that. But Sisters of Mercy have been a huge influence on me, like, my whole life. And we're finally getting a chance to kind of use some of that in our sound now, which has been really fun. So
that's why I'm asking it.
Yeah.
those two bands are getting more and more into your sound.
Yeah.
You started more like a emo band, I would say. Like.
Yeah, well, we always got out, like, I always thought we were like, kind of like AFI and Alkaline Trio and the Nerve Agents and kind of, all that era sort of stuff. And Tiger Army was a big band for us growing up, like the psychobilly band. But like, a lot of that stuff was in the very early days. And obviously My Chemical Romance was an influence. There was a band that we grew up loving as well. But all of those bands owe a debt to Glenn Danzig, you know, like in the Misfits. It's kind of like those records, those AFI records that like All Hallows EP, which sounds like the Misfits sped up. And I loved all that stuff so much when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's good. You just wait a second.
Yeah.
No, sorry, they will just come in so we can't
stand. Oh, yeah, sure.
But we can't really go
out. That's okay. Why do you guys all stand here and watch me talk?
I'll join in.
Oh, yeah, join in. Why do you join in? Yeah, pull up a chair, pull up a chair.
I won't.
Harry, you can't talk to her. No, you can. Come on.
So we welcome also Hannah and Ian. Thanks for joining. we were just talking about, I'm just asking this or that questions. What is your opinion on Danzig or Sisters of Mercy?
Oh, hell yeah. When we wrote this record, we were listening to Danzig 2 constantly.
Yeah, we were, yeah.
And it was definitely a huge influence. Obviously, me and Will bonded over Misfits at quite a young age. So everything they touched and everything Danzig touched sort of just has bled into everything we've ever worked
with.
Yeah.
I was only like, these guys introduced me to like both of those. So for me, and my sister Messi, I think what the first time it was that you would have shown me, but I was like, I mean, I came from a very different like musical background from these guys, but like I think we kind of like influence each other in a bit of like me musical theatre, these guys, like all that kind of stuff. So
Patricia came to our show the other day. So Patricia's a good friend of mine. He was in the Gun Club and the Bags and Sister Mercy. She was obviously on Floodland. So she came to the London show. She's been a good friend of ours for a while now, and she got some crazy stories about recording with Jim Steinman and you know, making those big records out in New York. Floodland is one of my favorite records of all time. Also, just for your listeners at home, Laurie from the band has just entered the room in his boxer shorts.
Unfortunately, you can't see that.
you can use your imagination.
It looks amazing.
Some sort of ASMR, Laurie.
So the next question is, Dead Out of Hell or Dracula's Puppet Musical?
Oh. That's difficult. So I would say Bat Out of Hell, but on our laminates, just for that UK tortoise now, on the other side, I did it as a joke to make the guys laugh. We had the Puppet Musical on the other side of the laminate. I didn't tell any of them, and they just got the first, they got the laminates on the other side of it. But Bat Out of Hell is a seminal album and one of the top five selling records of all time. That's for a reason, I think. I think it stands out in terms of rock and roll. It came out at the height of disco, so it was completely misunderstood when it came out in America first. Mm-hmm. And the Europeans got it first, before the Americans. It was big in Europe far before it was in America. So, I always feel... I think that over, in this side of the world, we have a... we have a penchant for dramatic rock and roll, theatrical rock and roll, a little bit ahead of the curve at that. We talk about Michael McRomance earlier on. They were bigger in England originally before they came over here. In Europe, they did these tours over here. And so, yeah, I think Meatloaf, even though it's a very, very American sound, you've got all these shades of Phil Spector on there, you've got shades of the Eagles, you've got all this different stuff going on, this bombastic, over-the-top rock and roll stuff. Mm. But I think it kind of feels very close to home for me in a weird way, even though all these influences are a little further afield. I remember listening to Bat Out of Hell in the car of my mum, my dad had the cassette tape or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think we have quite I think you can't help but have grown up with that sound. So I would say Bat Out of Hell. Anyway, that's my reason.
Oh yeah, I would say exactly the same.
I was
more kind of a fun question.
I was
going to
throw that would be exactly.
Yeah. Nice. Interview with a Vampire or Bram Stoker's Dracula?
That's a hard one. You're gonna split with them here. Kai, you want us to fight?
I straight away, Bram Stoker's for me. I love that movie. It's one of my all-time favorites. Yep. The atmosphere that movie is able to create, it's so enticing, but claustrophobic and gloomy. Oh, I fucking love that movie, dude. I love that movie.
What would you say?
I don't know, because Interview with a Vampire, I remember from a very young age seeing that, and I think a lot of our record, narrative wise, has been influenced by some of the characters in that film and in that story, in the book before the film as well. Bram Stoker's Dracula is much sexier, I think. So I would. I'm gonna just to throw a wild card in. I'll say Interview with a Vampire.
Bram Stoker's Dracula because of the sexy.
That scene when he's in the bed and all the
old one.
All the vampires are coming out from the bed. That was a big moment.
You know, the sexiest. The sexiest part of that film is when he's crawling on the wall.
And the scene where he's in sort of full werewolf mode for some reason.
And he's shagging that girl outside.
He's shagging Nina on the fucking gravestone.
Yeah, he's shagging Nina outside.
Oh no, it's Lucy, isn't it? No, yeah.
It is Nina, right?
Anyway, he's going in on the gravestone. Good stuff.
Nice. Playing festivals on Satellite or being opener in a club gig?
Oh, so festivals or club gigs? I would say club gigs because I think Creep always works better on like when it's a bit darker in the room. And sometimes when we're playing in daylight, it feels a bit odd.
Yeah. Do you remember 2000 Trees last year? And it was like pure. It was like 30 degrees in the UK, which is quite rare. And it was, the sun was just like, I would turn that to be a big tree after I came on stage. I would go with clubs.
Yeah, I love it. We did some shows with My Chemical Romance, and it was like that show in Bonn. I remember, like, it's been so warm, all my makeup melted off straight away. And I think for a band like us, it just works better historically for our sort of music and the bands that we like. Seeing it in a dark room, although I always say that scene with Cradle of Filth played that one year at Download Festival, and you always tell the story. You know, the rain cloud.
Yeah. So, like, literally, as they came on to start playing, a rain cloud sort of gathered around the stage. And Danny was like, "Download! We've hired this rain cloud!"
That was so perfect mood.
Yeah, exactly. So perfect.
Great. Yeah, I also saw you at the first time at Full Force Festival. I think.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's better in a small club.
I think so.
Yeah, for sure.
When it's darker.
But we can use lights and smoke, you know. Like, we've been getting in trouble for smoke recently. Kind of in a Sister Mercy style way, actually. Like, we played at Lafayette in London. We did two shows back-to-back headline shows. They're like a matinee and an evening show. And it's these crazy sold-out shows. But we asked our lighting guy, Hayden, to flood the place with smoke with haze. And there was a fire alarm upstairs. So the venue almost got evacuated. It was ridiculous.
Yeah,
they were not. That's bad.
He came after the set. He came up because he was like, "Guys, I got told of three times, but I kept going."
I said, "Don't stop."
How much smoke was it?
Oh, yeah,
you see your hand in front of you.
And Andrew Eldridge from Sister Mercy did this thing once, he was telling me, where like someone was shouting, "Turn the smoke machine off." And he just said over the mic, he just went, "We use smoke." Thing about him, right, is like, he's such a combative character. I don't think he'd be that fun to hang out with,
yeah,
but probably. As a rock star, he's the coolest dude.
Yeah, he can do it.
Yeah. He'd probably just be really mean to you if you hung out with him. He interviewed David Bowie once, and he was really, like, around the time that some of those 80s records came out, and he was just really mean to David Bowie the whole time. Which is I'll show you afterwards. I think it was for NME or something.
Okay, so the last thing you do before a show and the first thing you do after a show.
Ooh.
I think that they're two of the same things for me, and it's have a beer.
I think that's it, yeah. We don't necessarily have any sort of pre-show ritual, do we? We kind of just take a little bit of time to ourselves to have a drink and just focus. And I think that's it. Like a drink before we go on and a drink when we come off.
It's a lot of makeup in it before, and it takes ages to get it all on. On the last one, like, so my girlfriend Charlotte is a makeup artist, and before we were together, she worked with Creeper. She's kind of part of the Creeper family a little bit. But she designed all the amazing looks that we have in the UK. And she would have to book us in time slots because we're all such a nightmare. We would wander off.
Yeah.
She'd have time slots to get it done. So it would take her, like, most of the time before the show, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
So she does a makeup one after another, so you don't
do it. So you get your time, and otherwise we wander. You know? We scatter.
All right. Yeah. So let's talk about Zangwe War. Your third album, as you said, came out 1.5 months ago. How's your response so far? What do you think?
I think it's been the greatest one we've had to anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. I think we've always been like a band that's been influenced by metal and stuff anyway, even though we didn't necessarily play that. But I think it's the first time that kind of metal kids are starting to respect us a little bit more now. As before, we were just kind of, like you said, like an emo band or something like that. Like, and we love all that stuff, but I always saw us as more of a punk band before, like a rock and roll punk band. I think this record's kind of opened people's eyes a little bit, and people going, I didn't like them before, but this record's cool, you know. And so it's been fun. I think the response, like, especially with like the press and stuff, it's been. It could have gone one of two ways. People could have been like, they're changing too much. But it seems like it's been really, really well received. And, you know, we had lots of lovely accolades from it. And not that it means anything, like what, you know, anyone else other than the fans think, really. But, like, it is cool. that yeah. when like
but a, you want to get new fans, so
yeah. and also I suppose it's like reviewers and things, you know, when magazines are saying such nice things about it, it does make a difference, and it does kind of validate your work a little bit, as much as it shouldn't matter. Sometimes it does, you know. So that's my thing. Well, sorry guys, what would you say?
I think the only downside to the changing that you were talking just a second ago was that we were talking to our label about playlists on like Spotify and stuff like that, and they were like, We're really struggling to know what playlist to put you on. We don't know if we're putting you on an 80s playlist or the rock playlist or the punk playlist. They're like, oh god.
Yeah, you're so right. And I think that's what, you know, the funny thing about Creeper is, right, like in the UK we're a pretty big band now, which is weird for us because we're not big elsewhere, anywhere else has been. But like we're like this kind of hidden secret to the rest of the world, and you know, and it's kind of been that way for years. And our streaming is terrible because of this exact reason. We started off one way, then we completely changed again, and then we completely changed again. So people don't know where to place us a lot of the time. I kind of think it's what makes us special, and I like that about us. But it certainly is a little bit of, Ian's completely right. Bit of a nightmare for other things. It does stunt us sometimes. Kidding. Yeah. So Hannah, what do you think?
Yeah, about this? No, I totally agree. I think it. I think what's good about that though is it has a little bit of everything for everyone. I know that, like, personally, my family members, they are all very. I mean, I'm very different from my brother, but my brother absolutely loves it. And he kind of like, he sat me down and like put the songs in order. Like he was like, this is my favourite and I like this one because of this one. And like that for me is great. Like my family have always been supportive, but I think with this record they were like, oh, this is the best one you've done, 100%. I remember playing Cry 10 to my mum, she was like, yeah,
your voice sounds fucking so good in that one though. Like on Cry to Heaven, you can hear Hannah like fucking going full fucking giving it full Tina Turner in that chorus. So and it's great. Like, and it's, I think it's fun as well. I think it kind of it harkens back to another era of rock and roll that we don't see so much these days. But and like, it's not a very cool era of rock and roll. Like Meatloaf, you speak of Meatloaf to most people, they're not going to tell you that's a cool band. You know, that it's not a very fashionable thing. It's our favorite. It's our favorite shit, and it just makes sense to us. So I guess older people are starting to catch on a little bit now as well. You know.
But I also think you reference kind of a lot of from the 80s, 90s rock scene, not just Meatloaf, but also other stuff like as we talk about Danzig or Nick Cave. Or
I was also
thinking about Billy Idol sometimes.
Oh, there's a ton of Billy Idol.
So there's lots of stuff in it, kind of. What do you think about all these influences? Do you say we wanted to get that sound of that specific artist on that track, or did it just came naturally?
Changes from time to time, doesn't it? Like sometimes there's like a flicker of inspiration from like a part of one of those songs. Say like we were listening to a Billy Idol song, we were like, oh, that bit's so good. What makes that bit good? And then we sort of dissect it and we're like, okay, how can we do our version of this? But then other points, it just accidentally happens that way because we've been listening to it so much that it just leaks into our writing process. So
It's super organic like that, I think. In terms of like, it's never our intent to go out and go, okay, how can we rip this off? You know, but I think a lot of the time with us as well, probably going back to how I was answering the question before, I kind of think that some of the stuff that we're really into, you don't really see in the emo punk scene that much, or some of the scenes that we play to. So like people go, oh, that sounds like Nick Cave, reminds me of this other thing, which is really, really cool. But we just don't really fit in a box very easily for that reason, where it's like, it's easier to say, oh, this is a collection of these influences, rather than, oh, it's trying to be its kind of own thing. You know?
And in the metal scene, just relate to the other thing you said, that you're welcome in the metal scene. There are some bands like, for example, Unto Others.
Yeah.
So catch that vibe.
Oh, we love that band. Yeah.
That riffs, and they got bigger in the last years. And I think it's not really a revival, but it always plops up.
I think about that? We were talking to actually Dan from Atreyu, who was saying this to us the other night. He was saying to me and Sean the other night. He sat there in the corner. He was saying,
also changing.
There's lots of naked men around. It was just classic with the '80s, you know. But like, it's like a Tim Capello situation up here. I think a lot of that stuff. Like he was saying, it seems to be like. So we had hair metal, which was this whole big amazing thing with all this. It was big flamboyant rock and roll. We also had like hard rock, like Judas Priest and like all that side of stuff. And it was all killed off by like grunge and stuff like that that came along and kind of changed all that stuff. And I always thought grunge was so much more boring than all that stuff that came before. I like grunge, I do, but I think what Dan was kind of saying was, he's noticed like Atreyu's having a resurgence. You know, like these kind of bands that have more really over the top and flamboyant stuff going on. People have kind of got a bit bored of just seeing the guy on stage in a t-shirt singing. Underwears were a great example of that. Another band I think are really great from over here, actually. Grave Pleasures, they're from the mainland. And Grave Pleasures used to be Beast Milk. I think they do a style of post-punk that you don't really hear that much these days, of gothic rock stuff. And it's funny, since Sagwell came out, I've made friends with the 69 Eyes, who were a big influence on me growing up. And I think a lot of that stuff, I can see a revival of sorts, like as you say, coming also through.
Every 10 or 20 years, as you said, like Atreyu, the metalcore is coming back into action, and maybe 69 Eyes will come 5 years later.
But even in like the higher end of the alternative scene at the moment, you've got Ghost.
Oh, yeah.
And like Sleep Token. They're not like grungy dudes just in a plaid shirt playing, are they? Yeah. They're like, mask and they got all these theatrics, and it's like, that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, and really also has these 80s references, also with the saxophones.
Exactly. And I think that, like, as much as we like all sorts of music, I think that there's been this little gap for a while where it's been like, oh god, people want to come see a show, you know. But we did a tour with Alice Cooper last year. And it was amazing watching the craft of how much he puts into those shows and being like, oh my god, like, this, there's always been a home for this sort of music. Even when we were kids, like when we were kids growing up, like Marilyn Manson was like one of the biggest artists in the world. Slipknot, one of the biggest artists in the world. These are ridiculous shows. You must have seen these acts yourself. Yeah. Like, just like, those are the two kind of really obvious ones from that era. But like all of nu metal kind of had a silliness and over the topness to it. I remember my first show seeing at Ozfest 2001 in Milton Keynes Bowl. I was a little kid, and Disturbed played, and David Draymond came out on an electric chair. You know, like, I think shock rock and that stuff is fun, and I think people miss that a bit more now, and it seems to be coming back.
Especially with ticket prices like going up and up and up. You like pay.
You better see a show.
You want to see a fucking show, don't you?
Yeah. And I like it when you have those theatrical, I don't know the word, elements, not just fire and light, but also like stage acting or something, and you have drama.
Much more theatrical, almost bordering on. Yeah, I mean, I love going to the theatre, and you go to the theatre, you want to see the visual, not just like the lights, you want to see like little sneaky little things on stage, where you're like, oh wow, that makes it so special.
We've been doing all that a bit and it's funny. Doing it for the first time, the first few things, like Hannah in the wedding dress, the last campaign, we had to work out how to get Hannah into a wedding dress, which is a fucking nightmare to get into a wedding dress, right? Like, tell us about some of the logistics of getting into a wedding dress. How many seconds did you have?
Not, I don't know, like 20, 30 seconds maybe?
Oh, really?
Oh, no, maybe it's a little bit longer, actually.
It's a little bit longer, but it's still not a long amount
of time. Yeah, so I imagine, I'd wear, like, a bodysuit, which was obviously, like, tight-fitted, and then I would keep my trousers on, but, like, Charlotte would be backstage waiting to put the wedding suit, she would have it open and I would step straight into it, so she'd pull it up over the bodysuit and zip it up. But we made the mistake thinking it was zipped up all the way up to the top of the back of my neck, and it was only zipped halfway, so inside the pictures you could see this black bodysuit underneath the wedding dress. But it was just, but from the front visually it looked amazing.
To Hannah's credit, like on that, all of that, like I remember one of the first times we did it, like, because it's a wig as well, like there was a complete change of character in a few seconds. And there's no school you go to that teaches you how to do that stuff. You just kind of learn. You see Alice Cooper do it, and you see all these people do quick changes and stuff. But like, no one's teaching you how, so we're just learning it. So we headlined a stage at Download Festival and the pilot when it came back, and that's the first time we did it, I think. And Hannah, they made Hannah like out of flight cases,
almost like a little changing area, so I could just get changed really quickly. But I remember putting the wig on for the first time, and I put it on, and it was like crooked, and I looked at Charlotte and I was like, is that good? And she was like, no. She just like twisted it around so that it was the right way around.
Yeah, I need some time to learn that stuff. Yeah. You get better from show to show. So. Yeah,
to well, you've got fair, down, recently, yeah.
Amazing,
yeah.
And
yeah.
We don't do it anymore. We will do more.
Well, you know, when we can finally afford to bring it out to Europe, we'll be well trained, won't we?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Exactly what we're doing.
Yeah,
keep learning stuff in the UK and show
yeah.
us our big deal.
Yeah,
exactly. I think if we were to come up with that tour list now, like if we were the right size over here, that people would show up and see us. You know, we'd have to be able to. To do that stuff, you need enough space. If we were a big enough size, we would have easily been, like, we had that shit down by the end of the
yeah,
UK
for
one.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
I think you get there with Sangri War in the next 2 years.
Oh, I hope so. Thanks, guy.
So, yeah, just tell us a bit about the story from Sangri War, about Mercy and Spook. How does that all come together?
Oh, yeah, well each one of these records is a big concept record every time, and... I was basing a lot of the influence from Interview with Vampire, but like also like Leon, and like lots of cinematic reference points here, where we kind of wanted a character that was all movie monsters. It felt like to me for a long period of time, bar the obvious like the Linda Blair Exorcist and stuff. Or, like it was quite a male dominated slasher films. Were always a male chasing around a woman. You know, that was kind of these are the tropes of that sort of genre, and we thought it'd be cool. To have a really pure, innocent-looking female being the most violent, vicious one, you know, like and being the one, the dominant one. And so we had this idea for Mercy, which is based a reference to Mercy Brown, which is a very famous vampire story in real life. The idea was that you'd see her and you wouldn't believe how pure and innocent she was, but she's this vicious, deadly character. So yeah, and Spook was kind of... plays a role almost like David from the Lost Boys, and so you're kind of you would assume that he was the head of this gang, the Ghost Brigade, but really it's Mercy, and she's mentored him, she's taught him how to seduce and kill, and that's kind of what the record's about. It's about him trying to remind her what it is to be human, and to get themselves into the sunlight and stop being vampires. And so a lot of the reference points are from Near Dark, lots of what we wear on stage is kind of based upon that film. Kind of these classic 80s vampire films. And it kind of fit exactly with what the sound we were doing as well, because the music sounds like it's from an 80s movie soundtrack.
Yeah, it does, yeah. For how long was the story in your head, or how much time did it take? Did you wrote also song by song, or was it in a story, or did you have a story in mind? Or
we've done it differently every time in terms of that. Like me and Ian used to have a big whiteboard and we'd write like a bunch of things and have them all lead into each other. But it became quite, I think it became quite crippling that after a while, where it was like, oh, you can, like you have to write a song that links this song together. And if the song wasn't very good, you needed it in there because it made sense in the narrative. But like it became very tricky. So this time around, we kind of had a different approach. I had the story for ages, and we had the idea of the vampire record for years before. So the idea was always to swing in a much darker direction. But I think the story itself, I don't know, like we'd had it for quite a while before, and we kind of knew what we were going to do. But like writing the music around it kind of came out at a different angle this time around, and allowed ourselves a little bit more breathing room. I think it's been all the better for it, rather than having to be like, this person said this, and then this, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So it came all organically. You didn't write a novel and say,
no, we did that on the last one, which and I think a lot of it went over people's heads. It was a fucking labor of love, but like what we need to do really is kind of have a beginning point, an ending point, and parts in the middle that carry it. But we were really focusing on songs this time around. So
yeah, for sure, it definitely became like little creative roadblocks along the way when we had like a set example of songs we wanted to do or like gaps we wanted to fill. And it was like, we'll get to this one song where we're like, okay, so here we need a song that kind of starts a bit raucous and then moves into like a ballad end. And then we would get stuck on that one point because we had to try and fill the criteria. And if it wasn't coming organically, it just halted the whole creative process, didn't it?
Definitely, and I think like the problem with that as well is like everyone, you obviously it's great to have a concept record. It's really, really great to do that. But like if it's at the detriment to the music, people are putting on a record to hear good songs, you know. And sometimes we've been guilty in the past of trying to be too narrative focused. And even though this one it's a very obvious large concept record. I think the songs kind of came first this time around.
Okay. But yeah, I also think it's a journey throughout the whole record. There's ups and downs, and it all really fits quite good together. It was also the conclusion at the end that
yes,
they walk into the sun. I mean, you didn't really say it, but now I know it.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You say it on the, didn't say it on the record. So I was also wondering throughout the whole record, does Mercy loves her life or loves her existence? So because of the first songs you sing, she loves it. She wants to slash all that people.
Yes.
And yeah, at the end you think, ah, maybe she didn't.
No, I think that the idea is that Mercy had been doing it for so long that she didn't know anything else other than it. And she was just this, I think lots of times in life anyway, in general, when you live a certain way for a long period of time, you don't see outside the darkness. You can't see, if you're in a bout of depression, you just live with it and you go through this thing. Mm. And she was very, very vicious. And the idea is, it's kind of her teaching Spook to seduce and kill a lot of the songs where she's doing at the beginning. But by the end, More Than Death, when you get to that song, it's kind of about them had seeing the error of the ways and kind of and kind of it's got a happy ending for once for one of these tales, you know. The last one, someone died at the end, but this one did die as well. They both died.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
but this time around, it's kind of good they die because they're evil.
Happiness and death.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you define good and evil, especially referencing to this record? Because as I told you, most of the time she's slashing around, and you. It seems like when you sing about it, you appreciate it, you love it, how she does it.
Oh yeah, I think it's kind of her. I think that lifestyle in general for them would have been second nature, and she loved it. But like, she's an evil person. That like she's doing things that are terrible, and I think it's about Spook trying to let her see the errors of her ways and those things, and what it is to be a human being, you know. So as much fun as we have with all that stuff, like, you know, but this was as something that was happening in the real world, you know, you would tell her she was a monster.
Good to know. All right. But yeah, that's also the good and creepy stuff about it. We also, I think we all like in the horror scene kind of.
Yes.
When it gets creepy and bloody and gory and all that stuff. You wouldn't do it in the real life.
Exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, not, you know.
So also I want to ask you something about the cover. Are those the Sisters of Mercy on the cover?
The cover was designed by Welder Wings. And so the idea was that it was Mercy in the forefront. Like, it kind of, I love the cover because I think it looks kind of timeless in it, on its own. And I think the record, hopefully the idea is that it seeds, that the cover seeds the beginning of the story before you even press play on the record. And yeah, so maybe not Sisters of Mercy, but like these are kind of maybe the tortured souls surrounding her, the people she's been in the past herself. There's a lot going on there as well. There's a ghoul in the corner. But yeah, like it kind of, I think it says quite a lot about the story before you even begin. And it, much in the same way that the title, Sanguivore, involves you having to interact with it straight away. Because a lot of people
don't know what
the fuck it means, yeah. You know? and so it involves, I think we live in an era where music is somewhat disposable and people listen to it to one song and put it on a playlist and that's kind of it, gone. And we kind of, I guess, are interested more in something a little that exists a little further afield than that lasts a little longer.
It takes a little bit of investment.
Yeah.
The sort of shit that we liked to do when we were younger, like listening to a record, and it's not just listen to a song or two. It's like you get the vinyl, you open it, and you like read all the liner notes and the lyrics.
Yeah, you digest it properly. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you listen to it in a whole, and not just one song in a playlist.
Exactly.
So that you get a whole picture of it.
And that's kind of how the record is, you know. It's kind of like it asks to be listened to a whole. I hope, at least.
Yeah. So, thanks. One last question. Is there a question you've never been asked but always wanted to answer?
Is there a question you've never been asked? I've been asked quite a few questions.
Yeah. I'll think of it when I'm lying in the month. 5 a.m. this morning.
Let's ask each other questions. You know.
I panic in these situations that make it really silly.
I'm going to ask you both a question. Ian, what was your first guitar you ever had?
My first guitar was a... Oh my God, I can't even remember the brand, but I'm a huge Metallica nerd. Mm-hmm. And James Hetfield used to play those Explorer guitars. I really wanted one, couldn't afford a proper Gibson or a proper ESP. So my mum went and bought, it was like a replica, like a knockoff black one. I can't remember the brand now, driving me crazy. But yeah, my mum couldn't afford it, so she asked my dad, and they put together like 50 quid to get me this £100 guitar. And yeah, that was it. It's gonna bug me. It's like basically one of those guitars that isn't a well-known brand. It's like
made, but it's a first.
But it played like crap.
Is it the one you put the headstock of and that shirt?
Yeah.
Ian and I used to play in a hardcore band years ago. I wasn't in that band actually. That was one of the other ones. That was your youth group band.
Yeah.
And Ian, like at the end of the, it was like their last show, and everyone was jumping on him, and we snapped the headstock of the guitar.
Okay.
Yeah, Hannah. Question for you. Okay. What was the first song you learnt on piano?
The first proper song I learned was "Leonde" by Ludwig Einaudi, which is like really famous. Like you would all know it because Ludwig Einaudi is one of the best composers ever. And I think that was the first song that I actually learned that I was like, it wasn't just like boop, boop, like I think it was for Elise, you know, I was like that was one of the ones that I wanted to learn when I was a kid, and my piano teacher was like, right, let's do it, can
you
play now?
One of the first songs you learn on the piano, also The Entertainer, I learned at
my dad told me that, that's a great one.
That for Elise was always on those keyboards where it's like, I'm going to teach you how to play, press the button and it does.
I always thought about this, like in school, where like there were like this piano lessons, and so you'd all get like a piano or whatever, and you sit right with it, and they put the headphones on, and then they just let the kids play with it. And what we always did, they always had that button that said DJ. Do you remember that? The DJ button? And you just, it was shaped like a little kind of a record or something, and you push it. And because the teacher can't hear, it's just like, he goes, you know, like whatever. One dictionary. You know what I mean?
Oh my god, we've got the Casio.
Yeah, and I was like, why didn't we just learn music instead? We were fucking around. And there's that bit at the end, we're all scratching noises where you could pretend to be like.
Yeah, it's more fun.
It's so stupid, isn't it?
We need a question
for
you.
I think I've got one.
Good.
Okay.
So, I've known Will for a long time. He's been in many bands.
For how long you know each other?
He's about teenagers.
Yeah. Too long.
Time to walk into the sun.
Exactly.
Will has always been such an incredible lyricist. And the melodies, you've never written a bad melody.
No.
And I remember when I listened to Tight Like Strings, I was like, there was such a big gap between your vocal abilities in Little Girl Lost and Tight Like Strings. So, when do you feel like you realised that you could do so much with your voice, rather than just like screaming? When were you like, oh shit, I can actually form this voice and I can sing like this?
I don't really remember. I think that like, I still don't really think of it like that, because I still don't really know what I'm doing that well. I think the projection of it comes from, obviously I always loved Meatloaf and everything, but when I played in those hardcore bands, I could never like scream. I couldn't do vocal fry. I could never do that. Mm-hmm. I could just shout really, really high. It sounded like Comeback Kid or something like that, you know? So it was just really, really high. And then I realized, oh, I can sing kind of, I can shout kind of high, you know? And as soon as I realized it doesn't rasp when I sing like that. I was like, oh, I just throw my voice in a high way. But, I think it's Marmite sometimes as well. You don't always want somebody singing in a mid-low voice, you know, like, you don't always want that. But like, yeah, I think probably fucking around with you writing songs, you know, like, I think it was, it's been useful for us. We have a collection of voices that we use. And so Ian will say sometimes, oh, use the old hag for this bit. Like, I want you to go full Meatloaf on this one. And there's numerous names that he's named them over the years. And so we just add to this pot of stuff, and it's just like kind of picking the right instrument for each job, you know, like each tool for each job. So I still don't really know. And sometimes, you know, I'd never had any lessons, so I don't know if I'm doing it correctly or not. And sometimes I'm pretty sure I'm not. But we just gotta get through it. And I think the wear and tear from playing in hardcore bands has kind of let me kind of preserve it to a certain amount.
It's fossilized your throat.
Yeah, I still lose it every now and again, but not a great deal these days. Yeah, it's
just in smoking bars.
Smoking is the main problem, you know.
Okay. Yeah, thanks
for
your
time. Thanks very much. Cheers, dude.
Yeah, thanks for your time and enjoy the rest of the tour.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
And hopefully next year or next 2 years, headlining show with all the dramatic stuff.
We've got to go out and do it.
I would love that. So
yeah, I think what we've got to do is just come out here and see if people want to see it. You know, like the truth is, we've done a lot out here, but every time we put a headlining thing out, it's never really been well attended. But we've been out here quite a lot since then, so. As soon as people start like showing up to stuff on our own, we can start bringing that stuff over. But nice. So hopefully in the next couple of years we'll do something a bit more substantial here.
Yeah, I think so. Also, one question: do you also plan new music right now? Do you go the same direction again, or do you plan something different?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that. You know, that would ruin the whole bit. What I would say is that we're very happy at the moment. I think as a group and like. Our drummer Jake, this is the first record he's played on us with, and it's just changed everything for us. Mm-hmm. Me and Ian have played together in this band for many, many, many moons. But having Jake's influence on it has opened up lots of doors. Mm-hmm. So it's feels very comfortable right now. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. Definitely.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a really, really sort of happy little space.
It's the best we've ever been, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That sounds like it.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Oh, you're still there? Then you're definitely in the mood to give us 5 stars on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you're listening to us right now. Also, check out our Insta, TikTok, and Facebook pages. And if you're really crazy, you can support us at Steady or buy one of our shirts. No matter what you do, we say thank you for your support and stay heavy.